20th century is planted by Yitzhak. The Torah for planted by Yitzhak is the entire smallest sefer in Tanakh, Ovadia. Ovadia is one chapter, and that entire one chapter is the Torah for Yitzhak. That entire chapter, fascinatingly enough, has precisely 21 psukim, which is the normal required number for a Haftarah, to correspond to 7 aliyot from the Torah. 7 times 3, each person who is called to the Torah should read, or they should read for him a minimum of 3 psukim. 7 times 3 is 21. And the Haftarah, at certain moments in history, the Haftarah was a in place of the reading of the Torah. So that's Sefer Ovadia. Sefer Ovadia, I have to say that it's one of my great loves. One of my great loves. In my youth, I learned it by heart, and I've been reading it over and over again, and a little difficult now to get it all down my heart. It's just 21 psukim, but that's the way it is. That's what it is. It is a sefer that is of great, great contemporary significance. Its message is a message for our time and further. The entire chapter talks about the punishment that is going to befall Esau, who is also referred to as Edom, and we'll see what else Esau and Edom mean. Of course, the relationship to the Seder is right there, staring you in the face. The beginning of the Seder is the great meeting of Yaakov and Esau after 20 years. Yaakov had fled to Laban. He now flees back to Eretz Yisrael, and he sends messages toward his brother Esau, and he finds out that Esau is coming toward him with 400 men armed to the teeth. Yaakov Avinu swings into action. He divides his camp in two. He puts them bekonenut, on alert, highest alert. Is that orange? C, Gimel, highest alert. And they're prepared for war. They're prepared for war. And who does he prepare himself for war? As Rashi tells us, and we see it in the Pesukim, he prepares himself for Doron, Tefillah u'Milchama. He sends a gift to Esau. Not a gift of appeasement. Not a gift of appeasement. Has to be very, very clear. The gift that he sends is a symbol of a desire to make peace and be friendly. So he sends gift, he prays, the famous prayer, Hatzilenina miyad ochi miyad Esau, please save me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau. So Doron, Tefillah, and Melchama. Gift, prayer, and war. And then comes the moment of the great confrontation. But fascinatingly enough as well, preceding that great confrontation, there's a mysterious nocturnal struggle. During the middle of the night, Yaakov Avinu moves his family across the Yabok River, and according to our rabbis, he returns himself to the other side of the river because he forgot some small objects there. Tachin Katanim, small jars or jugs. He left them on the other side, and when he goes back to the other side in order to get his Tachin Katanim, he is accosted by a figure who struggles with him during the course of the night. A mysterious nocturnal struggle. And as the as dawn arrives, I can't help but the great pun. It dawns on Yaakov that this is not simply somebody who's coming to steal from him. And the Gemara expresses it, here's a man who's struggling with him for hours over a few farshlugna little jarolik over there, you understand.
You know, somebody can get 25 akudot if you bring it back to the makolet, if the makolet will take it. So, according to the Gemara, he turns to this strange figure in the middle of the night and he says to him, "Are you a thief or kubiusus, or are you a killer?" At first, he left with the impression that the man has come to steal his jars. Now, what do you do if you try to steal jars and you don't succeed? You know what you do? Go elsewhere. Steal somebody else's jars. You're trying to get somebody's radio out of the car and you call, "I'm Kleichman, you're on," that's all. But this man continues to struggle for those little jars till it dawns upon Yaakov Avinu that that's not really the issue. It's not the jars, it's not territory, it's not a little bit of land, but it's my life that he wants. And at morning, as the sun begins to rise, the struggle is over, and the mysterious nocturnal attacker is, for all intents and purposes, identified to us. Our rabbis tell us this was Sorrow Shel Esav, the heavenly prince of Egypt. So what's happening over here is that the struggle between Yaakov and Esav takes on a completely new and broadened dimension. It's not only the struggle between two human beings here on earth. There are worlds in collision over here. There's a struggle between great forces. And reluctantly, the nocturnal struggler turns to him and says, "Your name will not be Yaakov, your name will be Yisrael, because you have struggled with a prince of heaven and you have prevailed." But he's wounded, and as morning comes, he's limping, and until the sun shines, and ultimately he is healed. So that means the Torah has taken this struggle between two human beings who lived at some particular point in time about 4,000 years ago, and he said, no, this struggle is far, far greater than that. It's not only between two individuals, it's between two nations, it's between two cultures. And not only that, we get this feeling that this is going to continue on throughout all of history until it will ultimately come to an end. And that is going to become clearer to us as we go through the Haftarah. What is also quite interesting is the end of Parashat Vayishlach. There's a very long parasha. It has 43 psukim. That's long. In these 43 psukim, all of the children of Esav, who is also called Edom, all his children, his generations, the kings and princes that issued forth, and if one makes an even, I would say, a deeper study, one sees that the list is repeated three times, and it's an amazing thing. Why was this list given here? Why did we have to know the names of people that we will never come up against? Who needed to know it all? And of course, our rabbis are concerned about that. To talk about that would be already a sheer of great length, but it seems, in order to indicate and leave the impression that this Esav Edom is not one single human being pitted against his brother. It's already being expanded over generations. And a closer look at the psukim, those 43 psukim at the end of the parasha, will also paint a horrible picture of such immorality. And you have to read the psukim carefully with Rashi to find out who lived with his mother, who went ahead and raped his daughter-in-law, And all of the children that were born from this mixture, this mess, this morass of immorality. That is a good sentence. The morass of immorality. The muck and the mire of immorality. Why can't you tell me? You were sure, but I didn't say anything.
No, not good. I wanted to ask you before you go to the Haftarah.
Yeah.
What did the rabbi say? Why would he go back to small jars? Does it make sense?
It's not the topic of this year. Our rabbi said that by tzaddikim, since everything that they possess is absolutely kosher money, so everything that they possess has a degree of sanctity. Because they came by it absolutely honestly. I'm not better than the rabbis. But that's not the issue of the issue. God sent him back to the other side so that there'll be this great struggle of titans that is going to define world history for 5,000 years. If that's what you wanted me to say, why did you ask me the question?
Otherwise,
we like each other. Don't get me wrong. She's my and I'm nice to my Mishpocha, to my wife, to my children, and to Toby. All right. The real expansion is going to come as we go into to the Haftarah. Because the Haftarah is going to talk about Esav and Edom, and in one passage he's going to talk about Kol HaGoyim, all the nations of the world. So that all the nations of the world therefore means that we cannot be talking about a specific individual called Esav or Edom or a particular family. Because the Gemara tells us that all of the ancient families ceased to exist. We have absolutely no way of identifying a Kanani, a Chiti, a Chivi, a Yevusi, a Girgashi, and Amalek. Their identity was completely lost. The Gemara says because Sancheret was the king of Ashur, what he did was he moved populations that he counted from one place to the next, until what happened was the most natural thing of all, that they simply lost their identity and they were submerged in the larger cultures in which they found themselves. Unusual, of course, is there's only one people going back to ancient time that refused to mix and refused to become submerged and overwhelmed by all of the mighty societies in which they find themselves. It's really miracles. I've quoted a number of times. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, the survival of the Jewish people, I swear, the survival of the Jewish people is greater than all the miracles of the Exodus. All the miracles of the Exodus. So Esav Edom, who's going to appear in this Haftorah, cannot mean the family Esav or the family Edom, because there is no Esav Edom anymore. So therefore it must mean that Esav Edom has taken on a much broader and different meaning. So I can cut straight to tell you exactly what the rabbis say. The rabbis say that Esav Edom is a code word, for Rome. Rome, of course, means a number of things. Rome became Christianity, and we will see that Edom includes not only Christianity, but it includes Islam. And for that matter, what it really refers to is all of those people on the face of this earth that have struggled against the Jewish people. All those who have been our enemies throughout history and watched. I'm going to go into the Haftarah because there are such beautiful psuk in there. I won't forgive myself if I don't read some of these psuk in there. They're gorgeous. And there's power in these psuk in. Chazan Obadiah. This is the vision of Obadiah. Kamar Hashem Elokim LeEdom. So says God about Edom. Shemua shalom v'yeh Hashem. We've heard. The word is v'yeh Hashem. That tzir b'goyim shulach. And there is an ambassador, a messenger that has been sent out amongst the nations. And you know what the word is going out? The word that's going out is kumo. Let's arise. The makumo alel achamo. We're going to go to war against Esau. The time for the destruction of Esau Edom, and that Esau Edom is going to pay dearly for all that they did to the Jewish people throughout history. The time has come. The fact is, you are but small. I make you small amongst the nations of the world. You're exceedingly despised. You're really nothing. The Gemara says, in what respect are they nothing? They say because Edom didn't have a language of their own, didn't have a script of their own. The least that makes a nation distinct from other nations is you have your own language and you have your own script. But it means more, the whole personality of Edom is despised. And Sodom libchashi shi'echa, the wickedness of your heart, has seduced you into thinking, Shochi v'chagvei sela, those who dwell in the cleft of rocks on a high, Meron shifto. This is describing an Edom who thinks that he's so strong and he's so powerful, he will last for 1,000 years in his wickedness. He thinks that, and God says, wherever you are, I'm going to take you down there. You may be a mighty empire. You'll crumble like a deck of cards. Zedon l'koy shi'eva, your evil is that which has seduced you into thinking that shochni b'chag be'sela, those who dwell amongst the cleft of the rocks, m'ron shifto, who have raised and exalted where they dwell. Omer g'libo, he says in his heart, mi yuri deni unetz, who's going to bring me down to earth? Who is going to be able to bring me down? I'm mighty and powerful. And of course, we have seen it just in our lifetime. It's amazing. We've seen so many mighty empires crumbling before our very eyes. Some of them we don't even remember that they were once empires, so we wouldn't even remember. I mean, this is all in one lifetime. Britain was also a mighty empire upon which the sun never set. And I mention Britain in particular because I believe they're going to get dishonorable mention in Obadiah, together with a lot of other nations. We're not talking about the Soviet Union. The French Empire. Well, they think it was a whole world. What's left? I don't want to start talking about the French. No. God says in Tagvi HaKadeshek, if you will lift yourself and soar like the eagle, the Imbein Kochavim Sinkinecho, if you're even going to place your nest amongst the stars, your eye and your mighty, Misham Olidecha, from there I'm going to bring you down, Nukum Hashem, says God. Some of course you say that no. God is even encouraging him to rise higher and higher, because the higher they get, the greater is going to be the fall. In Ganovim Boach, then he says, now we're talking already, the destruction is beginning to come. The destruction is coming. In Ganovim Boach, if thieves would come against you, in Shodadei Laila, if robbers of the night would come against you. Echnit made the heart to remain silent. You weren't even able to fight against them. And what would they do? Hello, Yiknevu Dagam. The fellow comes to steal during the course of the night. By the way, does that sound like something we read in the Sefer?
Yeah.
The fellow who comes to steal the little Jarala. Now, if a thief comes, hello, Yiknevu, they will steal Dagam. Dagam means, you come into a house, you don't go after everything. You go after the TV, you go after the, what do they go after these days? Jewelry. But you don't empty the house completely. But you know what they're going to do to Esau Edom? nothing is going to be left. In Dotsrim Do'o, Lord, Dotsrim are those who harvest the grapes. If the grape harvesters were coming against you, Halogashiru, all they love, they would leave the clusters or the weak clusters of grapes that are filling up half full. But nothing is going to be left. If Nechtesu Esav, how has Esav been searched out? They found out everything that Esav had. Nibu Matspunav, this is such beautiful psukim. Matspunav, that which was hidden, all that he had hidden, was revealed. Empty, left with nothing. And even more than that, he describes in the next pasuk that Esav has alarms. There are those who are with him. Esav with him. Arakbul Shilchucha. Kol Amshei Benitecha. Until the border, they accompanied you and they said, here, we're with you. We're with you, side by side, shoulder to shoulder. Kol Amshei Benitecha. All of those who are made a covenant with you. Yishiyucha, you even talked you into it. You really thought that you had a coalition of forces with you. And you know what happens when you finally come across the border and begin the struggle? All of a sudden you take a look around and you're left alone. There's nobody there. There's nobody there. Yahuwah, they got you. Anshei Shlomecha, those who were at peace with you. Lachmecha, those who Lachmecha can mean those whom you sat and ate with, really good friends. Yosimu Masar Tachtecha. They placed a net for you to fall in beneath you. Ein Tvunavo. He doesn't understand. He doesn't know what's going on. He thinks that he has allies that he doesn't have. Yes?
I thought that Esav was comprised of everyone who wasn't part of Yaakov. In other words, the whole world except the Jews.
That's what's going to come clear in the...
Who are the people who are...
I'll tell you who I think about in this this passage. And I got all the information I needed. I typed it into my computer, and there it is. It all came up. The Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. There were promises that the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto had, that as they rise in the ghetto, the Poles outside the ghetto are going to rise up against the Germans. You know what they did? They betrayed the Jewish community. They betrayed the heroic defenders of the Warsaw Ghetto. And you know, the Rebbein Shalom Bleibnik Shuldig, one of the great moments in the Second World War, is July of 1944. Already the tide of battle has changed. Russia is rushing across Eastern Europe, and in July of 1944, the Polish underground in Warsaw rises up against the Germans. And Stalin, if there's one thing you can say that he did good in his whole life, he stops outside the walls of the city of Warsaw, he stops his advance. Stops. The English were going crazy. America was going crazy. He waited for 66 days until the Germans crushed the Poles in Warsaw. A city of 1,200,000 remained with about 160,000, 170,000. He didn't want a strong Polish resistance. He wanted them crushed. And you know who was going to do the job for him? Hitler was going to do the job for him. A year after they betrayed the Warsaw Ghetto, this was the worst betrayal of all. Everybody assumed this is going to be it. The Russians are moving in and surrounding the city. The Poles are rising in the city. Between the two, the Germans are going to be crushed. 66 long days he waited. Didn't blink an eyelash. Arhag vol shel chucha kol anshei b'techo. They made you promises that they're going to come to your aid and assistance, and they didn't. That's the only good thing that I can think of that's found out of it. They betrayed Jews. How many were 55,000, 60,000 Jews were left in the Warsaw Ghetto? They were fighting with their bare hands. And all the promises that they had from the free Polish king, and nothing came of it. So this is exactly what happened to the Poles. Mito keneged mito, and you can see, measure for measure, is really the message of this Haftarah. What you did to the Jewish people, this is exactly what's going to be done to you. Let me read some more story. Hello, by Yom HaMunum Hashem. On that day, when that day of punishment comes against the nations of the world, I will destroy the wise from Edom, utvuno mehar Esau, and understanding from Mount of Esau. The Chatu Giborecha Teman was a city in Esau, in Edom. Edom was a land, there was a place. And by the way, in the Sefer it says that Esau tells Yaakov, come, I will accompany you, let's go together. And Yaakov begs off, he says, you know, you can't move. I'm moving at a slow rate with the children and the chefs and the cares. Who can you go? And then I will come, El Adomi Seira, I will meet you there. So Rashi says, we never heard of Yaakov and Esau meeting up again for the rest of their lives. When did this happen? So Rashi says, you know what can happen? He quotes the last pasuk in this Haftarah, that the day of judgment, the saviors are going to arise on Har Tzion, and the kingdom, from Har Tzion, Esau, Christianity, Islam, all the sons of Israel of all generations are going to be judged, and God is going to be king. Watch. The Chatu Giborecha Teman, your mighty ones are going to be broken, Teman. So now, I start telling you that where did Esau go? So the Pasuk in the Seder, the Pasuk says that between the two of them, they had so much cattle that they couldn't live together. So Esau is the one who chooses he's going to leave. And Rashi says, why is he going to leave? Because he doesn't want any part of the blessings that were given to Yaakov, because the blessings that were given to Yaakov also include payment. And the payment is going to be that God told Avraham that your children are going to be enslaved for 400 years. He doesn't want any of that. So he goes off to Har Seir, the Mount of Seir, the other side of the Jordan, the southern part of Jordan, from parallel to the Arabah, down to Petra, Arabah, that was the land of Edom. There was a city there that was called Teman. And in some of the psukim in Tanakh, they refer to a city there called Teman. It's also called Teman because Teman means the south, and all of Esau was to the south. So here we have an individual, and we have a land, and the individual expands to be all mankind, and the land expands to the whole world. Now it begins, this is the list. You know why it's going to happen to you? And now it begins to list what Edom, Esau, world did to the Jewish people. May Hamas Achincha Yaakov, from the violence that you did to your brother Yaakov, and many places in Tanakh. Esau is referred to as the brother. You should have had some kind of feeling for your brother. May Hamas Achicha Yaakov, from the violence that you did to your brother Yaakov, Techascha Busha, you should be covered with shame, then Nichrato Yom, you should be cut out and destroyed for all time. Watch. By these descriptions on Mamish Jewish history, world history. Beyond my mother Chomineged, the day that you stood on the side, Jews are being taken to gas chambers, and you're standing on the sideline. Don't hear any condemnation. You can't even spare a few bombers to bomb the rail line starships. Beyond Madhonek Minehead. You're standing off to the side, beyond Shvod Zarin Chelo, the day on which strangers, enemies come and they capture all his people as well. The Nachrim Bo Sharov and the foreigners came into the gates of Israel. Vayu Shalayim Yadu Goro. Very important. And you remain silent while they cast lots over Jerusalem. We're going to divide it. We're going to divide it a shtika. I'll take a shtickle, you'll take a shtickle.
Yeah.
And while you are trying to divide Jerusalem, you understand? While the enemy wants to divide Jerusalem, and there are those who stand idly by and couldn't care less, if anything, they go ahead and encourage the enemy. So that they wish to upheave about Jews who are ready to divide Yerushalayim. Are Yerushalayim Yavukoro? Earlier, Yoel, the Navi Yoel said that he condemns the nations of the world. There's Anzi Chileku. They divided and they partitioned my land. And for that they will be destroyed. And what happens if Jews want to partition the land? Are you Shalayim Yado, Yadu Goro? So the Pasuk says, Gam Atok Achav Mehem. Even though you may not have been active, whichever nation we're talking about, you weren't active. But you stood idly by and did nothing. I consider you like one of the enemy. Gam Atok Achav Mehem. Thou Tehne Biyom Achicha Biyom Nachro. You shouldn't have looked. On the day that your brother was given over to the enemy. Shouldn't have looked. You shouldn't have been happy on the day that the people of Yehuda were being destroyed. Life went on as usual. You shouldn't have opened up your mouth wide on the day that Klal Yisrael is in sorrow. But this is really including the whole world. We're talking about the whole world. But wait, it's getting more specific. I think 8 times it says, you should not have. Now, of course, you have to remember what's fascinating about this is that when Obadiah is saying this, none of this has happened. He sees it in his prophetic mind's eye, as though it happened already, and he's describing what he has seen long in advance of it ever happening. On the day of their calamity, you should not have come in. Now you see, there were those who stood on the side, and then there were those who came along to participate in the rape of the Jewish people. You should not have come into the gates of my people on the day of their disaster. You should not have been there to watch what happened to them on the day of their misfortune. You shouldn't have sent your people against his forces on the day of his disaster. The next pasuk is the one I mentioned Britain, the next pasuk is Britain. You shouldn't have stood by the crossroads to destroy those who flee. Don't hand over those of his remnants on the day of Tzar. By the way, Roosevelt fits into this too.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of the boat? The boat that they sent back to St. Louis, they sent it back to Hamburg. What a shanda! Techazcha Bunsha! And what about the great? His Majesty's Navy is out there with all of its force so that unseaworthy boats that are bringing Jews from Europe, fleeing from Europe, are sent back. Oh, the English are up in. Ugliest time in the history of Great Britain. They fought a great battle against poor Jews running away from it. It's unbelievable. They sent boats back. And when those that they didn't send back, You're in Cyprus.
Yes.
They took them from one another. Wasn't in Cyprus, you understand?
Yeah.
Well, Jews want to get home. And it was your job to make sure that they would have a homeland.
Right.
That's what was your responsibility. That's what the world placed upon your shoulders, you understand? And now, it's unbelievable. The Nabi saw, so clearly, And most probably, if we will go through and make a study of the Crusades and Khmelnytsky, the Cossack, what was being done in our days clearly before the eyes of the whole world must have gone on a thousand times over in the thousand years of Jewish history in Europe. Jews have no place where to go. You shouldn't have handed it back. The remnants, Nadav, the Shaidas are Plato, beyond Tzara. Right? And not being fair to England and the United States if I don't include the great lovers of Israel, Canada, you understand? Canada during the Second World War was asked to take in 20,000 Jewish children, and they had no place for them. They can put in another 1 billion people today, you understand, in Canada, and you won't feel them, but there was no place for 20,000 Jewish children. So the Abish to her people. Kikarov Yom Hashem al Kol HaGoyim. The day of reckoning. And by the way, the day of reckoning doesn't have to be one day. The day of reckoning has come for each one of them already. Not enough yet, but each one got it, you understand? England is no great power anymore. They're not the great British armada. They're a straw man. That's all they are. The day of God is coming close upon all the nations. Do you see what happened in this passage? Esav, Edom, individual, living at Har Seir, has all of a sudden become Kol HaGoyim, because he's talking about all nations of the world. And here comes the rule, measure for measure. Warsaw Ghetto, Russian troops, a year later, spending for 66 days twiddling their thumbs. Kasher Asita, as you did, Yeyosem La shall be done to you. Gemulcha, that which you did, your shul Pirosheva is going to return down upon your head. Exactly what you did is to be done to you. You're going to enter into all sorts of alliances, and at the crucial moment, you're going to be betrayed. You're going to be betraying one another. As you, and here we may be talking to the Jewish people, the bitterness that you had to drink on my holy mountain, Yishu Kol HaGoyim Tomit, all of the nations are going to drink it. The Shasu, they're going to drink. The Lom, they're going to swallow. Watch the poetry over here. V'hayu Kolo Hayu. And they'll be like they never were. Just disappear. They're going to be punished. They're going to be punished. They're no better today. They're simply no better today. We talk about it often, but this is clearly the message of the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im know exactly what our period of history is going to be like. It's Korov Yom Hashem. When it says here that the day of God is coming close, it sure is a great deal closer than it was 2,000 years ago. We're coming closer to everything. We see how mighty empires crumble and fall to the ground. But you know where the place for all Jews is to be? Uthar Tzion Tia Plato. The remnant can be right here. There may be Jews in the world that think that we're in the greatest danger, they're making a mistake. Unfortunately, they're in great danger. But we have a prophetic promise. Ubahartsiam Tia Plato, and Hartsiam, there will be a remnant of your Kodesh. There it will be holy. The Yarshu Beit Yaakov and Morashayim, and the house of Yaakov is going to inherit those who have cast them out, when you get everything back. Bahaya, I hear, here of course, is another clear relationship to the Parsha. And it even starts in last week's Seder. If Yosef is born, in last week's Seder, Yaakov calls his wives out into the field and he tells them, you know, I see that your father is not as friendly to me, and I think it's about time we overstayed our welcome, let's go. So Rashi says over there that once Yosef was born, after the birth of Yosef, Binyamin is going to be born in this week's Seder. And unfortunately, Rachel is going to die in childbirth. I didn't know it. Somebody told me. I don't know how many know. It says that there's a chazal someplace that says that Rachel was 36 years old. 36 years old when she died in childbirth with Binyamin. So Rashi there says, in last week's Seder, that when Yosef was born, so Yaakov said, Sitno shel Esav, the one who is going to destroy Esav has been born. And now I can go back, and by the way, we see it in this week's Seder too. In the Seder it says that Yaakov presents his wives, so Leah, Vilodeha, the maidservants and their children, and Yosef, the Rachel. Yosef stands in front of his mother Rachel. He doesn't want that Esau should be able to look at her. In a sense, Yosef has already, the young Yosef, has already begun to present himself as the antagonist, the historic antagonist to Esau. And the Gemara says, Ain Esau no fail, Esau only falls into the hands of the children of Rachel. Yahushua is the one who weakens Amalek. Yahushua is from Shevet Ephraim, which is from Rachel. Shaul, who is again going to wage war with Amalek, is from Binyamin, one of the children of Rachel. Mordechai is from Mordechai and Esther, come from the children of Rachel. Even Amalek himself, by the way, Amalek after the sin, there is no nation Amalek anymore. Just like all of the other nations have lost their identity, Amalek also has lost his identity. And this is a famous statement that the Chavra, Salvation, used to say in the name of his father, of Moshe, Salvation, that Amalek is not a biological entity. Amalek is an illogical entity. Anyone who has as his policy the destruction of the Jewish people gets the halacha of Amalek. So therefore that's what he's talking about. He uses the term Esau and Edom. It means any people who act with hatred against the Jewish people. And it's Feindlich. There's no lack of them. This is the passage. The house of Yaakov will be fire with Beit Yosef Lahava. The flame is going to be Beit Yosef from the children of Rachel. They are the ones who are going to destroy the enemies of Israel. Ubei Esav Lakash. And the house of Esav is going to be straw. It's going to be straw. The Dogu Ben, they are going to ignite them. Varacholim, and they will consume them. They can eat them up. The Lord, yes, Savid, the Beit Esav, there shall be no remnant for the house of Esav. Ki Hashem Dibir, because God has spoken. Yes?
Mashiach,
Ben Yosef. Oh, I stopped in my tracks. The next thing I was going to say was Mashiach Ben Yosef. But you know, I sort of had this feeling that I want to finish the Haftorah. So I left out Mashiach Ben Yosef. Of course, about Western Monica, absolutely right. No, I'm very happy that you brought it to my attention. Okay? Now, the Yoshu HaNegev at Harei Sav. Those Jews who dwell in the Negev are going to inherit the mountain of Esav. How do I describe geographically where is Esav? Opposite the Arava, on the other side of Yam Halela, to the south. So therefore, those who live in the Negev are the ones that are going to inherit the mountain of Esav. Vashvela, And those who lived in the Shvela, you understand, had Tzvia Pituach, Ramat Aviv Gimel, they are the ones who are going to inherit Plishtin. Make no mistake, the land of Plishtin is part of biblical Eretz Yisrael. Gush Katif and Ava is absolute Eretz Yisrael. Just as much as Tel Aviv, maybe even more than Tel Aviv, you understand? So anybody who's going to try and tell you that, well, no, Gush Katif, we can give it up, it's not holy, that it's nonsense, sure, nonsense, it's not true. It's simply not true. But I will save that for, I'll find some pasuk in another something. And you should, I tell you once, you should remember that every Friday night when you sing Kori Bon, that was written by Rabbi Yisroel Najarah 400 years ago, was the home of Abba before there was a single Palestinian in the world. There was a big Jewish community in Abba. The oldest Jew in Eretz Yisroel is in Abba. Well, make the world crazy. Make the people crazy. It's unbelievable. We're fed lies. It's amazing. We're living lies every day. Right, I better stop. You're not going to promise
us. No.
But Shvela and Plishtim, those who live in the Shvela, they are the ones who are going to inherit Plishtim. The Yarshua et Shde Ephraim, the Yarshua et Shde Ephraim, that Shde Shomron, and you see the ones in the Shvela, those who are along the coast, so they have Plishtim to the south, and then they have the Shomron to their east. So they're going to inherit that too. Ubinyamin. Now the tribe of Binyamin really is the very closest to us. Binyamin begins the moment you leave Yerushalayim proper. Not even then, you don't even have to leave Yerushalayim proper. Givat Zohar Katid already, Givat HaMishpat. That area is already all Binyamin, going from there until the Jordan. Neve Yaakov, further than Neve Yaakov, until you come to the land of the Ephraim, which is already the Shomron. So all of that is Binyamin. Binyamin goes all the way to the Jordan. What's on the other side of the Jordan? Gilad. Gilad is Ebrayade. So each one is going to inherit that land which is closest to them. The Goros Achel Azeh, the name is Choyal, Asher Kna'anim at Tzorfat, and this exile force of the children of Israel that were with the Canaanites at Tzorfat, by Tzorfat of here, there are those who say that Tzorfat, there are two names in this passage, Tzorfat and Tzorfat. Now there are those who say that Tzorfat and Tzorfat means precisely that. Tzorfat is France and Tzorfat is Spain. The truth is, I wouldn't want to have those names in Tanakh anyway, but it might mean that, because Jews already, after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, Jews already made their way to France. The Rhineland, there were any Jewish communities in the Rhineland after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, and most probably they came as far as Spain. So if that's what it means, then it means that they are going to Yeshua, the Rei HaNegev, they're going to inherit the cities of the Negev. Now if it's talking about that Tzorfat and that Tzorfat, then I have a feeling what it means is Jews who are living in Golos and are going to come back. By the time they come back, by the time they finally decide to come back, there isn't going to be much place to the country. So finally, they will find the people who are going to settle the Negev. They will have no place where to stand then. Because all of the other exiles that have come are going to take up the whole country and then I'm starting here. I'm sorry, you come from Brooklyn, and you go to the Negev, you understand? You go to the Negev. We don't have any place left over here. But what it means is that all of this is going. No, I was going to say all of this is going to happen. Half of this has already happened. You would have read Ovadia 60 years ago, and you know what Ovadia would have sounded like? Ovadia would have sounded like something from outer space, science fiction, or prophetic fiction. We're already at the point where we can understand Ovadia better than all the previous generations. Because there are Jews in Binyamin that are going to take Gilead. There are Jews along with Shelah that are going to take Plishtis. There are Jews in the Negev that are going to take the land of Seir. 60 years ago you didn't have that. 70 years ago you didn't have that. So you had to then learn Obadiah with a great deal of faith that someday we're going to have Jews in Israel. I'm going to take over Plishtis. By the way, that's still something that is prophetic. In other words, it's not enough to have Jews in the Shvelah that will inherit Plishtim. You need Jews in the Shvelah that are going to want to inherit Plishtim. That's what you need. We have Jews in the Shvelah, but I don't think they're too interested in inheriting Plishtim. For all who know Shein Bahar Tzion Mishpoch Tari, so this is the apocalyptic end of history. For all who know end, I should say, end for some, but for those who remain, it's going to be the beginning of a great messianic era. You know, all the greatness of the messianic era must be preceded by the removal of evil from the world. The greatest Kiddush Hashem, the Nevi'im said, the greatest sanctification of God's name is the destruction of evil. Because as long as there is evil in the world, in a sense, God is in concealment, because man asks, there's a God? How does he permit such evil in the world? That question is the question, more than any other, that in a sense puts the non-believer, or one whose belief is weak, it puts God sort of in eclipse or in concealment. But that's why you have to understand the puzzle. For all Moshiach and Bahar Tzion, when the saviors will come to Hatzion, Mishpatah HaRizah, which means evil will be punished and eradicated from the world, then all of a sudden everything is going to become clear to everybody in the face of this earth. V'hoso Hashem HaMalucha, then kingdom is going to be God, because the whole world is going to be recognized that there is indeed a God. But what's necessary? Wait, when I finish, hang it. We need another 2 minutes. It is the destruction of evil. So it begins in the Seder as a confrontation between two individuals. And by the way, you know what the Navi is really saying? And in fact, Edom Esau is used throughout Tanakh to represent evil. It all started from Rivka when she went to ask God what's taking place in her stomach, in her womb. And God tells her, there are not two individuals in there. There are two nations. And there's a mighty struggle of nations that's going on in there. And you know what else God tells her? That ultimately, the younger is going to vanquish the older. The Gemara describes it as Rome, that as Yerushalayim, and Caesarea. Caesarea was the seat of the Roman Empire in Eretz Yisrael. These two are in absolute conflict throughout all of history. Turn it over the page. I'm only going to take this to one of the sources that I have over here. And listen, there's all Laban and these things. The first source is the Ramban. The last three lines in the Ramban, it's the Ramban from the beginning of this Seder. You're seeing the last three lines by Al-Dati. Gamzeh Yirmoz, this is very difficult in a sense to take, because it says, Ki anachnu hitchalnu mitzilatenu biyad Edom. The Ramban says, we are the ones who are guilty of our falling in the hands of Rome. We caused the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. Why? Ki malchei bayit shein, because the kings of the second temple, bowed to Britim HaRomim, they made a treaty with Rome. Umehen Shabo Beroma, there are Jews who went to Rome, and we invited Rome here. Vehi Haipasi Bab Mithilatam Vyadam. We invited the terrorists, the killers, into our own country. We brought them here. We brought Rome here. Zemuska, the Devet Alten, Mufusamasparin. That's men. Anybody who's read the words of our rabbis and history books knows that we were guilty. We invited Rome in. there was civil war between Hercules and Aristobulus, and in a sense, the great peacemakers, the peacekeeping force of the holy or unholy Roman Empire, and said peacekeeping force that are going to come. And we have yet into the Chevra right over here yesterday who were talking about bringing in all sorts of peacekeeping forces. We brought ourselves down because we invited Rome into our system. The Ratzak and the Eben Ezra are the ones who say that Esau Edom no longer exists, and that in Tanakh, Esau and Edom are representative. They are code words for the Christian and the Muslim community. That's what we're all about. So therefore, Chazal Ogadia is not talking about an individual called Esau or an individual called Edom. It's talking about a whole world of Shalei Yisrael. The Olam Moshim, the Haaretz Yom, Lishpot HaTarisav, Ba'ita, La'Hashem, HaMelucha. Anybody who wants to ask questions, you can please come forward. Why don't you turn all of these things off? What else do I have?
One caveat to that. There's no caveat as a literature itself. I add one caveat. I believe with perfect faith that God's will be done. That whatever will happen will be because Hashem wanted it to happen. But I believe with equally perfect faith that I cannot absolutely determine what God's will is. I mean, I know that by next meat and milk it is God's will that I not eat it. That much I can say. But I cannot say in any given political situation, this is God's will and this is not God's will. And if people do say it, a very heavy responsibility that they take upon themselves. Okay. Yes.
He has a very good shower and he made good. Why did God need 6 billion goyim?
I'll answer you in the same sense. To serve us.
Yeah.